Hey everyone, my name's Nick Brandt. I'm one of the senior leaders here at Circa Riders. I want to welcome you to the Circa Rider podcast. If you don't know us, we're a YWAM missional community based here in Huntington Beach, California. Our passion is Jesus. Our mission field is our generation, and we believe our opportunity is now. I want to sincerely thank you for being a part of our broader community. Enjoy this podcast.
Let's jump right in. Turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 13 in your Bibles. I'm going to read starting in verse 31 of chapter 12. Earnestly desire the higher gifts, and yet I will still show you a more excellent way. If I speak in the tongues of men and angels, but have not love, I'm a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries, all knowledge, and I have faith so as to remove mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. If I give away all that I have and I deliver up my body to be burned, but have not love, I gain nothing. I was watching a documentary about Dennis Rodman on ESPN. How many of you know who Dennis Rodman is? I'll tell you. Played with Michael Jordan. How many of you know who he is? Okay, good. Played with Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen in the 90s Chicago Bulls teams. He's one of the most eccentric individuals you could possibly imagine. He one time put on a wedding ceremony where he put on a wedding dress and walked around the streets of, it was New York City or Chicago, and had a wedding ceremony where he married himself. He did a ton of drugs. Michael Jordan would laugh because he would go out and party all night. He would show up late to the pregame. Coach Phil Jackson would start him, and he would go out and get 20 rebounds a night. He was a freak individual. He was unbelievable in how aggressive he was and how much of a dominant player he was. And it's really fascinating. He is friends with Kim Jong-un, the leader of North Korea. He was a part of setting up Donald Trump, former president, setting up the meeting with Kim Jong-un and him. He was the middle guy. Dennis Rodman. Chicago Bulls basketball player, really interesting dude. He lives around here. I've Ubered people that have been at bars with Dennis Rodman, so you might meet him at some point, not at a bar, of course, but you might meet him at some point walking around Orange County. In the documentary, it was really interesting. The last scene, he's sitting on a chair in an auditorium. And in this scene, they ask him a series of questions. And at the end of the questions, he pauses, he looks at the guy, and he goes, I'm one of the 10 most recognizable people on the planet, and you think I would be happy. And he starts to weep. Cries, weeping, and he goes, weird, huh? And the documentary cuts and ends. Dennis Rodman's in his early 60s now. And he discovered what most people don't discover till they drop, that you can live your life and have everything and be nothing. And it's very sad when someone who professes the name of Jesus Christ has not yet discovered that reality, that you can be on stage and you can speak. You could be in ministry, and you can all do all sorts of things for the kingdom, outside of the kingdom, money, power, success. You can have it all and yet be nothing. I remember when I read John Piper's book, Don't Waste Your Life. I encourage everyone in here to read it. It will change your life, and it will change your perspective on things. In one of the first two chapters, he talks about his dad, who was also a preacher. And his dad was preaching in a service like this. There's an old man who responded to the gospel. He's very old. He came up. He sat next to John Piper's dad. And he put his head on his shoulder and he began to weep and weep and weep. And it was not tears of joy. He kept repeating the phrase, "I've wasted it. I've wasted it. I've wasted it. And I plead with you to choose the way, the excellent way that the Bible, that Jesus, that Paul, that the apostles prescribed for you, not living the wasted life. Living the life that when you get to the end of your days," my grandfather just passed away, and I was talking with my dad this morning. We were eating breakfast, and I asked him, "What did you learn throughout this whole experience?" He goes, "You know, I learned that at the end of your life, that's where you will find out what you were really made of. Don't wait till your deathbed to find out what you were made of. If you were made of love, if you were made of the substance of the cross," which is what we're going to highlight and discuss tonight out of 1 Corinthians. 1 Corinthians is interesting because I think, this is my personal opinion, you don't have to agree with me, that it is most like the Western / American church. If you read all the letters, and of course all the letters are relevant, but this one has some issues that seem like we deal with more than some others here in the West. And in the midst of Paul's letter, he almost pauses from addressing all of these things and gives them a song of sorts. This melody that they were to remember and almost sing. It was to be on their minds and on their hearts. And here's some of the interesting correlations between the Western church and maybe the Corinthian church. They had division. If you walked into their church meeting, some people would have been sitting over here going, "I'm of Apollos." And some people would have been sitting over there, "I'm of Paul." And some people would have been sitting in the middle going, "I'm of Jesus." Paul's like, "Who's Paul? Who's Apollos? Did we die for you? Why is there division? Why are you choosing Team Paul or Team Apollos?" And there was divisions. It was like, "I don't like First Baptist, so I'll start Second Baptist. I don't like Second Baptist, so let's start Third Baptist Pentecostal Church this time." And we just do it over and over and over again to the point now where it seems, I looked at the numbers, I couldn't confirm these totally, but there's over, around the world, around the globe, there's over 40,000 denominations. "I'm of this. I'm of that." Very similar to what we see. "I don't really like the message tonight. I'm not going to go there anymore. Worship, I don't know about that. Kids service, didn't really like it. And so I'm going to move," and we divide without holding fast to what Paul's going to prescribe for us tonight. There's idolatry, similar to the idolatry that we have of self in the Western world. Yes, we don't go to the temple and worship Athena anymore, but you get up every morning, you look at your Instagram and decide how many likes we have. We go, "Oh, they like me," and we worship self. Sexual immorality, jealousy, misusing and abusing leadership roles. The Corinthian church was so wild that some of the leaders were getting drunk on the communion wine. I don't know how you do that, but they were doing it. They would rather be right with each other, like, "I'd rather be right in an argument than to save a brother weak in faith." There were people who had just come out of lifestyles, similar to people who come out of lifestyles in our day. And it's probably not wise for an alcoholic who just got saved to go back to the bar the next night and start witnessing. They might need a little distance from that so they can grow strong in faith. And so there were these people, they were sacrificing their meat to idols. And some of the stronger Christians were saying, "Don't ask. We know it's probably sacrificed to idols, but who cares? They're not anything anyways. There's nothing behind those idols." And so instead of preferring the brother, when they were in front of the lost people, they would prefer the lost people so that they wouldn't look weird. And they wouldn't say, "No, I don't want to eat your meat." No, Paul was The opposite of that, you'd rather offend the lost than offend your brother sitting next to you or your sister sitting next to you. Competition. Yet at the same time, this Corinthian church was talented. They had some gifted people. Read 1 Corinthians chapter 12. They were doing stuff that some of you in this room have never done, maybe never will do. They were talented. The Western church is talented, huh? You can go on YouTube. I like this preacher, and I like that preacher. And don't get me wrong, there's unbelievably talented people in the Western church that I have been absolutely rocked by and my life has been transformed by. On top of that, we have money, don't we? Did you know that the American church, without Europe's help or anywhere else in the world, the American church alone could fund the Great Commission being completed by the year 2030 alone. Just our money. We could fund it, all the Bibles, all the missionaries, all the organizations. We could do all of it. Very similar to the Corinthian church. And yet, Paul does not come to them with a scourging rebuke like a teacher would. 1 Corinthians chapter 4, Paul says this stunning phrase, and I've got to digress here for a second because I feel it's prophetic for some of you in this room. Paul says, you have many teachers in your midst, but not many fathers. Listen to me very carefully here. The reason circuit riders is not because we have great apostolic vision. We love apostolic vision. We want more of it. It's not because of our teaching. Love teaching. It's not because of all the outreaches that we put on. It's not because of the empowerment of young people. The reason circuit riders is the way circuit riders is because there was a man named Brian Brent who became a father to many of you in this room. And you had, some of you don't know who that is. He started our ministry, passed away about a year and a half ago. And some of you in this room only got a couple interactions with that man, yet he changed your life, and you are sitting in this room, and the trajectory of where you are going is completely different because of one or two encounters and some teachings you've listened to. That's the difference between a father being in your midst and a bunch of teachers. You have thousands of teachers, but not many fathers. I fathered you in the gospel. Listen to me tonight. There isn't anything more confidence instilling, anything that fills you with more zeal, in my personal opinion, from my experience, than to be someone's spiritual son or daughter. To be able to sit with someone and they deeply care for you and mentor you and disciple you and sometimes push you and sometimes drag you out of situations that you're not supposed to be in. Difference between your school teachers and your parents. Teacher doesn't care if you graduate high school ultimately. Do you think any one of my high school teachers is sitting up at night, man, I hope Derek really made it in life? I can't remember more than two of my teachers. Mr. Nation, because he taught me how to lift weights. And Mr. Becker, he was my German teacher. I don't know why I remember him, I just do. I remember two of my teachers' names. They don't care, they have a job. They get paid to teach you stuff, and if you succeed, that's on you. That's not what a parent is supposed to do. That's not what a dad is supposed to do. They teach you and make sure that you make it in life. And they set it up and they spend their time, their money, their energy to pull you to something and somewhere. That's what a good dad does. So Paul comes with this type of energy, and I have to encourage you, raise your hand if you're not circuit rider staff in here. Every one of you, listen to me very carefully, you need to find someone. It is so vital. Find someone that would be willing to sit with you. They don't have to be the best preacher. They just have to have integrity in their life. Find someone that you can sit with, learn from, and be fathered, big brother, big sister, whatever you want to call it. If you don't like the language of, like, you're my dad, that's fine. It's kind of weird sometimes, too. It's like Ben comes to me, texts me, hello, Father, bless you. It is a lie. You need to find someone. It'll be different. It's like taking a baby. What do you do with a baby? Do you give it to its mom or do you put it out into a forest when it's born? You give it to mom. You give it to the parent. If you are young in faith, and I'm talking about age right now. I'm not talking about being a Christian for 10 or 15 years. If you are young, you need someone. Circuit Rider staff, raise your hand. If you're not Circuit Rider staff, there's not a lot of Circuit Rider staff here tonight. But there's a couple people that you can go to and ask to mentor you. Circuit Rider staff, listen to me very carefully. A lot of you go to someone, you say, help me. And listen, more than help, call Kath Mason and say, hey, I know you have 3 kids and you must be very tired. May I go to the store with you, help you collect groceries, take those groceries into your house, put them in the cabinets for you. And then at the end of it, will you give me 15 minutes of your time where I can sit with a notepad, ask you questions, and you tell me your wisdom? That would be far better than, hey, help me. If you come to me, if you come to Zach, if you come to anybody else, someone is much more inclined. If you come with that spirit of, you got something, I need it, give it to me. And be annoying with it too. Some of you already are annoying. But text more. I love it. That was a little bit of a digression, but I feel it's important for you in this room tonight. Find someone to be your big brother, uncle, father in the faith to you, mother in the faith, whatever you want to call it, so that you can grow into the maturity of what Paul is saying here tonight. Now, Paul comes as a dad, and he says, I'm going to show you a more excellent way. Now, 1 Corinthians chapter 12 and 14 are very similar to what we've been talking about the last 4 or 5 weeks. What did we talk about? Baptism of the Holy Spirit. How many of you were here for that night? How many of you got zapped? No one? All right, that's exciting. Must have been a boring time, I guess. I don't know. How many of you got touched that night when you were here? Okay, good. A few of you. Next week was on prophecy. It was 1 week on prophecy. How many of you learned to hear God's voice for the first time and you're like, what? I was right? Anybody have that experience or that moment? We talked about all of these different giftings. You know what's exciting? When you learn something, what do you want to do with it? Use it, right? Well, men in the room, if you were to get a new car, what are you going to do? You're going to show it off, even if it's a Prius. Be like, look at it. The paint's not chipped. Like my last car. I've got a Prius, so I can make that joke. You're like, that dude has a Prius? Whoa, weirdo. We like to show off the things that we know and that we value. And the Corinthians valued gifts. Circuit Riders, we value gifts. We value action. This message tonight is not about, hey, let's put the gifts to the side and let's really focus on love. It's not the point of the message tonight. The point of the message tonight is take the gifts and set them in the river of which they're to flow. To set them in the house of which they're to live. A few months ago, some of you know this, I used to be an Uber driver. And a few months ago, I told Chloe, my wife, said, I miss Uber driving. And it wasn't because of the money. It was because I miss being around lost people in like kind of a more natural environment. Like when you go out street preaching, you're like sweating already. When you look at someone, you're like, oh my gosh, did they see me? Look at them. You go up to them. Sometimes that awkward interaction. I just want to be around lost people that weren't concerned about me. Just so you know, when you're an Uber driver, to people that get in your car, it's like you don't exist. You're just there driving. You're a robot for all they care. All of a sudden, the robot turns around and starts talking about Jesus. That makes for much more of an inviting time than some other situations I've been in. So I applied, and they reaccepted me.
Yes.
So for the last couple of weeks, I've been going out periodically, not too often, but a few times. And immediately, I was confronted with all of my loveless tendencies. fear, unbelief, selfishness, passivity, indifference, not caring about the people that get in the car. And the echoes of what one of my mentors had told me in the past sat me down first 3 years of being a believer and said, Derek, you're not a very loving person. Those echoes were still in my mind. And oh, the tension of being 11 years in ministry and wanting to be overcome and dominated by love, but preference gets in the way and Derek Mack usually ends up on top. I want to be dominated by love. I want you to be dominated by love. Your life won't be so much about, what am I doing? Where am I going next? Where am I serving? If you are dominated by love, your life will be a torrent of the Holy Spirit. Where's Jackie Day in this room? Jackie Day leads our prison ministry. And every time that woman talks about prison ministry, she's in tears. And it's uncomfortable for me because I go, where is that in my life? I want those tears. She cares. God's going to give his kingdom ultimately to those who care about the lost, to those who are sitting next to you right now, fully given over to love. Not the most talented people. Not the most gifted people. We focus on gift. Derek, how can I become a better preacher? Honestly, guys, I don't really know. Go in your closet and start preaching to yourself until you're good. That's about all I can give you right there. But how do you become more loving? I can give you an answer there. Look at Jesus on the cross. You can't look at that image and be, show up once a week. You can't do that anymore. So I want us to feel the weight of the more excellent way that Paul's going to bring to us tonight. First verse. If I speak in the tongues of men or angels, but have not love, I'm a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. Lest you think, this is oftentimes what happens, Paul is talking about love versus gifts here. No. Paul is not talking about love versus gifts. He's not even talking about gifts. He's not even talking about actions. He's talking about you. He's talking about me. If I speak in the tongues of men, if I could preach like Francis Chan, if I could preach like Billy Graham, I know some of you circuit riders in here because I get in your cars, and Billy Graham sermons are playing on repeat. If you could preach like Billy Graham or speak in the tongues of angels, what even is that? This is one of my proofs for why some of you, when you get the gift of tongues, it's not in an actual language. It's in a heavenly language, as some people would say. It's right here. He says it. If you speak in the tongues of angels, and Paul is referencing a Jewish author who wrote about these women who would speak in ecstatic tongues, and they would call them the tongues of angels. If you could speak in, can you imagine? Gabriel just shows up in here right now. Michael, the archangel. Michael, I thought you were over Iran somewhere, like the Prince of Persia. Like, what are you doing here? And I started speaking to him in his own language. He goes, whoa, that guy's talented. But if I don't have love, you know how God sees me? You guys would sit here and you go, wow, that guy is cool. This is why the game of love is so glorious, yet the greatest tension piece. Because I can look at you and I can look at your action and I go, you're a loving person, but maybe you're not. And do you know what that ends up being according to the verse? A noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. If I don't have love, not other people, not if I do actions, but if I don't have love, I sound like a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. This is a direct reference to the way pagans would worship. Pagans would worship, and they would use these gongs and they would use these cymbals, And they would bang them repeatedly when it was time for ritual or for worship. And there are these gongs that had this noise to them that only had one tone and couldn't create any melody. It was an empty sound. And Paul is referencing here that if you are loveless, then your sound that your life sings is empty. It's ultimately for naught. When I first started to get dominated by love, it was when I started to read the book of Acts. And when I would read the book of Acts, I was mesmerized by the miracles, yes. But even more so, I was mesmerized by people like Stephen. You ever read about Stephen in Acts chapter 7? The most unbelievable exposition of the law. How many of you go read Leviticus and are like, yes, Jesus is all over this? No, Stephen, to the priests and to the scribes and the Pharisees, gives this exposition on how Jesus is the law. He's greater than Moses. They pick up stones, and you know what Stephen does? Runs? No. No running involved. What does he do? He goes, I see Jesus in heaven. And they stone him, and he dies. I looked at him and go, is that me? Would I be that way? What motivated Stephen to go from serving widows at a table to the first martyr of the early church? I looked at Paul's life, Acts chapter 20, verse 24, probably my favorite verse in the entire Bible. I don't count my life of any value. When I read that verse, I got it. That's when love started to dominate me. I had realized that the problem was not that I didn't love. It was where my love was placed. I valued Derek, and I made everybody else my servant ultimately. I value me and my ministry, and I might use you as a bridge to get over that to my ministry. And you know what's funny? If I were to bang a gong here right now, most of you would get annoyed probably after about 10 seconds, right? Just chun, chun, repeatedly. You get annoyed. Loveless people tend to be annoying, don't they? I was pretty annoying when I first joined Circle Riders. Most of you don't know me when I first joined Circle Riders. But I had tension with some people. And it wasn't over them or the way they were doing things ultimately. It was because I didn't count love as supreme in our relationship. I needed to fix you. I had something for you. I had the better way. It was me. And so you can go ask Zach and Nick later, how annoying was Derek? And they'll tell you how annoying I was. And so lovelessness tends to have an annoying sound attached to it. Verse 2. If I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith so as to remove mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. That's a shocking statement. Totally an un-American statement. We value the talented. We value the gifted. We value those who have the biggest following and set the culture. We value what we want ourselves to be. We want to be the talented. We want to be the gifted. We want to be the known. Now just imagine this for a second. If I had all prophetic powers, if I pointed at you and I go, your husband is this guy. First off, you'd be kind of freaked out, but then you'd be like, yes, I'm getting married. If I could tell you everything about you and expose all the mysteries of your heart and make your life make sense on why Jesus did this, and I understood all mysteries. Some of you have lost loved ones in this room. And if I could tell you the real right reason why that happened, you would be ecstatic, most likely, over the moon at these mysteries. If I had all knowledge, first off, that might scare some of you if I knew everything about you. But imagine if I had it. And I could tell you what the lottery numbers were. You're going to be a millionaire tomorrow. Here's the lottery numbers. If I had faith to make you in the green shirt, North Face shirt, levitate off the floor and move you over there. There isn't one person in this room who would sit here and go, not something. All of you would be like, how do you do that? Let's create a ministry school around it. Ministry school name, how to make people levitate and move across rooms. Whoa. If I have faith to move mountains but have not love, I am nothing. That's how God ultimately sees the one who fails in this area. I didn't write these verses. These aren't my verses. Think about it this way. You best not go too quickly over John 3:16. For God so loved the world. That's the description for why God sent Jesus, because of my love. If we could have a description of my life or your life, what would it be? For Derek so loved himself and wanted to be seen and liked that he pretended to be loving. That he put on the mask. He played the character, so to speak. Not for you in this room. There's a more excellent way, according to Paul. Paul got it. This to me is the most ridiculous statement. That's why it's my favorite Bible verse. I don't count my life of any value. How many of you, if you went to self-help therapy, what would be the main thing they tell you? Look in the mirror, tell yourself you're beautiful. You got value. You got it. You're worthy. You're it. Boom. If you tell yourself that enough, eventually you'll believe it. Paul, on the other hand, was, I don't count this life of any value or precious to myself. What did Jesus say? Remember Jesus' famous words? There's people who love their lives and they'll try to save those lives and they'll end up losing it. And then there's people like you and like Paul who look at their life, they count it as loss. Do you ever read those verses and go, do you ever just stop and go, have I ever said that in seriousness? This life is loss. Done. Gone. I don't care about this life anymore. Here's the vessel. You use me in whatever way you see fit. Paul got it. I don't count this life of any value or as precious to myself. Trust me. Listen to these words very carefully. Trust me. If you determine to live the love-filled life, then to other people, it will look like you don't care about yourself. It's like a mother who has two or three kids, and she's got a little bit ruffled hair, and her clothes aren't as nice as they used to be, and you look at her and you go, it seems like you're not valuing yourself. But then you realize she's so consumed with who? Her children, and giving herself over to someone else that other people are like, oh, something off there. But not to the mom and not to Jesus. When Jesus should look at your life and he goes, look at your hair. It's off. Circuit rider, getting up 5 in the morning after you just ended a tour stop at 11. Getting up at 5 to drive somewhere. Your hair's disheveled. All because why? You gave yourself over to love. How does this work in the workplace? If you're in the workplace, do you ever look at people, look at them, and ponder with your eyes and see them and go, wow, you're an eternal being. And I have something for you that could change the trajectory of your life. Start there and see how your words and your actions change. Start with, I'm going to look at that person and I'm going to take them to prayer and I'm going to go to God on their behalf. And eventually one day, maybe it's in 2 days, maybe it's in 10 days, I'm going to go and I'm going to share this gospel with them. Start there. Start with your eyes. You remember Jesus? When he lifted his eyes, Matthew chapter 9, he looked and he saw the crowds. In order to be a loving person, you first have to take eyes off self. You have to look up and you have to see other people. That is what drove Jesus to compassion, is when you see the need. You see it. It's like, I've shared this before, but I have this awkward thing that I do sometimes like a homeless person. To avoid knowing what I should do, I just turn the head and I walk that way and act like they're not there so that what? I don't see and so I don't feel. For you in this room tonight, doesn't matter if you're in Circuit Riders or you're not in Circuit Riders, this is the way of the believer. It's the excellent way. It's the way filled with love. Verse 3, if I give all I have and I deliver up my body to be burned, but have not love, I gain nothing. Paul encourages the use of the gifts. Paul encourages you to live a lifestyle of radical sacrifice unto the point where you might suffer because of it. I know we don't talk about this a lot, but you got to remember, Paul would say things like, I want to know him. How many of you want to know God? Okay, here's what you're signing up for then. And the power of his resurrection, we love that, yesterday. And then what? And the fellowship of his sufferings. Paul encourages you to do crazy things where you might be in trouble. This is one of the funny tensions my wife, she does not like to be in trouble. I love to be in trouble. Not in like get in trouble with the police type of way, but like not get pulled over by cops kind of way. But like get kind of, you get mad at me for sharing the gospel with you. One time I was in Uber and I was sharing the gospel, and it was to someone, you know, the Church of Scientology? I don't even really know what it is. Anyways, I was dropping some girl off there, and she reported me to Uber, and Uber messaged me, and they said that if you do this again, we're going to kick you off the app. Can't drive anymore. And I was like, and it was so funny. The next day, and I mean this, the next day I'm driving someone to LAX. They get in my car, we start talking about the gospel, and they start screaming at me. Like full-on screaming. At the end of the ride, tempers had flared, coming down just a little bit. And I looked at the guy as he was getting out of the car. I was like, hey, you know, I could get kicked off the app if you report this. So do you think you could not report that you just yelled at me and I shared the gospel with you? Thanks. He didn't, so that was good. I love it. I love if you want to go be a missionary somewhere, if you want to be a street evangelist all the days of your life and get in trouble for Jesus, do it. But don't do it without love. Because if you do it without love, it profits you nothing. It gains you nothing at the end of the day. Done through any other motive or avenue than love. I'm annoying, I'm empty, I'm hollow, I gain nothing, profits me nothing, and ultimately, I am nothing. Still, there's a more excellent way. If you're an American in this room, you've been indoctrinated since you were a young person that everything's about you. It's not. Social media ultimately is wired to get you to think about who? You. Ultimately, everything that Satan has built throughout all of human history is not to get you to come to a bonfire out the backwoods and do some witchcraft. It's not what Satan is most excited about. Satan is most excited about you being your own God. The famous line of the humanist Reformation was, man is the measure of all things. And since the 16, 1700s, that's what we've been fed. You're the measure, what you think, what you want. No. There's a more excellent way, Christian. There's a more excellent way, and if you have not given yourself to, this is not a, hey, tonight, let's repent of these three things and overcome these three things. This is about you tonight valuing more than anything the love that Jesus displayed on the cross. Listen to me. What you value, you will live. What you value, you will go after. This is why it is so important to not do behavior modification after this. It will not work. Change what you like. Change what you value. I'm not going to value this anymore. I'm going to value the person sitting next to me, and I'm going to value love as the jewel of my life. It's the more excellent way. Unless, I'm going to read this quote, you have any confusion. This is not about love is kind of an emotion. You kind of sit over here. You're a loving person because you feel it. You're an action person. No. Let me read you this quote. Love is not an idea for Paul. It's not a motivating factor for behavior. It is behavior. Love is to act. Anything short of action is not love at all. Love is not set over and against the gifts, precisely because it belongs to a different category. It's not gifts versus love. Rather, love is the way in which gifts are to function. Earnestly desire expressions of the Spirit that will build up the community is how love acts in this context. Listen to me. Love is action. Men in the room, one day you have to plant your feet in the ground and you have to open your mouth and you have to look at that girl and you have to say, I love you. Love is expressed through an action. If you're weird over there, just kind of, you know, staring at girls, going, maybe I love that girl. But you never stand up. First off, all the girls are like, don't stare at me from in the corner. Weird guy. If you're a guy in this room, lady in this room, and a man comes and moved in action to tell you how he feels, it's a lot better. It's where the butterflies come in. Ladies, yes, no? Some of you are like, maybe. We'll see. We'll see. After the 20th date, we'll see if there's butterflies. Love without action is not love. But action motivated by anything outside of love, jealousy, selfish ambition, competition, selfishness, is also not love. Ready for what love is? It's the best definition I could find. Or this is the best kind of ethereal out there idea. I think it'll make sense for you. Love is motive and emotion and action combined. Motive, emotion, and action combined into one place. If you've got those three locked in, you're motivated by love. Your emotion, you look at people and you care deeply. And you're moved with compassion towards them and mercy. And this causes you to act. Congratulations. You're doing 1 Corinthians 13. It's the essence of it at the end of the day. Where can we find all three of those attributes most expressed? The cross of Jesus. Do you know Jesus directly says that the definition of love is his cross? John 13, Jesus looks at his disciples and says, love one another just as I have loved you. By this, the world will know. How did Jesus love you? He went to the cross for you. This is why you get the book of Acts. It's why you get the Acts of the Apostles and the Acts of the Spirit through the early church, is because the church did not view the cross as the logo of a religion. They viewed it as a lifestyle to be lived. When they saw it, it wasn't just, oh, that's amazing. That's where Jesus died for me. It also became the place where I'm going to express my love for you. Tonight, there is no big repentance moment. What I want you to do tonight, as we set love, we're going to go through 1 Corinthians 13. Let's just read a little bit more. Love is patient. I'm not very patient as a person. How many of you are not patient? Okay, honesty. Love is patient. Love is kind. Love does not envy or boast. It's not arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. When you get married, insisting on your own way will be the greatest tension point. Learn now to not insist on your own way. It's not irritable. How many of you wake up and your friends and your family cannot talk to you until you've had coffee or it's like 3 hours in advance? Anybody? Oh, people are not wanting to raise their hand on this one. Love is not irritable. It doesn't get up in the morning and say, oh, I need coffee before I'm going to treat you kindly. Love is not resentful. It does not rejoice at wrongdoing. Far too many Christians rejoice in unrighteousness. And they make their idols, the people they want to be like, the people that don't even remotely come close to following Jesus. Love does not rejoice in unrighteousness, but rejoices with the truth. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. If you only had these 7-8 verses or so, you could spend a lifetime of fruitful living based off of taking those verses and putting them into action and making them your reality. There's a very famous phrase in 1 John. It says, what manner of love has the Father bestowed upon us? When you come to the end of your life, what kind of love, when you have those people gather around your deathbed or your graveside, wouldn't you want them to say, oh, what manner of love Derek lavished on us? Oh, what manner of love will come from your lives? Oh, how the world could be transformed and changed just by living out these verses. Here's my proof. I'm going to read you two quotes from early Greek writers talking about Christians. First one is by a guy named Lucian. It's incredible to see the fervor of which the Christians of their religion help each other in their wants. They spare nothing. Their first legislator, their first leader, Jesus, has put it in their heads that they are brothers and sisters, and they live like it. It was a non-Christian writing about believers. He looked in and he goes, they think they're brothers and sisters, and they live like it. That's usually the opposite of when people come to the church and look at the church. What do they usually say? Hypocrites. They say, why are there so many? You know, I've talked with a lot of Muslims. A lot of Muslims will say, why do you guys have 40,000 denominations? Why do you guys have so much division in your midst? What if the world could say all sorts of things about us, but when they look into our lives and in our midst, and when they see us interact with each other, they would say, Oh, they think they're family. Another quote, Tertullian. It's our care for the helpless. It's our practice of love that brands us on the eyes of many of our opponents. Look, they say, how they love one another. Look how they are prepared to die for one another. I want to come to the place in my life. Remember how I said I'd Uber drive immediately confronted with all of my loveless tendencies, my fear, my unbelief, selfishness. Over the last 3 weeks, I've poured into 1 Corinthians 13, not for a message, but for myself. And I encourage you to make this your ambition. The wasted life is predicated on what your love looks like. And if you have it at the end of your days, will you guys stand with me? We're going to make one declaration tonight. Jesus, I want to value a love that looks like the cross. And I want that love to be on display in my life. You know, it's fascinating to me that 11 years into ministry, I can look back and think I'm far more loving and then get in an Uber and still be fearful. It's fascinating. 15 years from now, this message will not get old for you. It's a watering hole that you'll have to come back to over and over again, because as you step out, oh, how quickly Derek Mack, I tend to leave the pastures of love. How I tend to leave looking at other one another and actually being motivated by my love for you rather than what you would think of me if I did this for you, or if I said this, or if I acted a certain way and was put in a certain light for you. How many of you know just by raise of hands that there might be a little bit of a love deficit in your life that Jesus wants to meet you in tonight? Go ahead, raise your hand. How many of you know tonight Jesus wants to encounter us, not with the be more loving, but value my cross and watch what I do with you. Value this thing as what your lifestyle's to look like and see what I do with you. Can you raise your hands just for a moment? I want you to declare this with me. Jesus, I want to value, I want to value your cross and the love you display there through my life more than anything else.
Thanks for listening to a Circuit Rider podcast. For our full library of podcasts and more information about the Circuit Riders, visit us at circuitriders.com. To access worship, messages, and training courses, visit us at circuitriders.tv. To get involved with the day-to-day of what we do or see what's happening across the globe, you can follow us at Circuit Riders on Instagram. And finally, don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts. We'll see you next time.